I don't really have a title apart from renunciation. I prostrate to my ennobling, impeccable armies. I shall try to explain to the best of my ability the essential meaning of all the scriptural pronouncements of the triumphant ones, the path praised by the triumphant's holy offspring, the fording passage for the fortunate desiring liberation. Listen with a clear mind, O fortunate one, whose mind would rely on the path pleasing to the triumphant. Through being unattached to the pleasures of compulsive existence and eager to make meaningful your life of respite and enriching factors. Since taking keen interest in the pleasurable fruits of the ocean of compulsive existence without pure renunciation is no method for achieving the peace of liberation. In fact, by craving what is found in compulsive situations, limited beings are completely bound. First, strive for renunciation. By accustoming your mind that there is no time to waste, when a life of respites and enrichments is so difficult to find, turn from your obsession with the appearances of this life. By thinking over and again about the problems of recurring rebirth, and the laws of behavioral cause and effect are never fallacious, turn from your obsession with the appearances of future lives. When, by accustoming yourself in this way, you never generate for even an instant a mind that aspires for the splendors of recurring samsara, and you develop that attitude day and night, always interested keenly in liberation, at that time you have generated renunciation. But since even this renunciation, if not held with the development of a pure bodhicitta aim, will not become a cause for the splendors and bliss of a peerless, purified state of enlightenment, those with sense generate a supreme bodhicitta aim. Carried by the currents of the four violent rivers, tied by the tight fetters of karma, hard to reverse, thrown into an iron mesh pit of grasping for true identities, completely enshrouded in the heavy gloom of the darkness of awareness, unrelentingly tormented by the three types of suffering, life after life in limitless existence, compulsive existence. Having thought about the condition of your mothers who have found themselves in situations like these, develop a supreme bodhicitta aim. Even if you have built up as habits renunciation and a bodhicitta aim, still, if you lack the discriminating awareness of realizing the abiding nature of reality, you will be unable to sever the root of your compulsive existence. Therefore, make effort in the methods for realizing dependent arising. Well, I hope that wasn't too much of a wake-up call, or rather a cold shower of renunciation for us to begin with this morning. It was the first nine of the 14 verses of Tsongkhapa's three principal aspects of the path from the Tibetan Lamrim tradition. When I started the Going for Refuge and Prostration practice 12, 13 years ago, and Tsongkhapa was the first figure on the refuge tree with whom I had a significant encounter. And the three principal aspects of the path was the first of Tsongkhapa's texts that I encountered. And I remember at the time it having a profound effect upon me. I'd never become a Buddhist because I was interested in meditation, but because after growing up in the rather bizarre moral mess of apartheid South Africa, I was looking for a system of ethics to help me lead an ethical life. The Four Right Efforts was the first teaching which really grabbed me by the balls. And it's an approach that still provides a basis or context for much of my off-cushion practice. And this text of Tsongkhapa's kind of extended for me perhaps a more humanist or utilitarian approach to ethics. right into the heart of the spiritual domain, into the highest aspiration of renunciation. And renunciation, followed on by compassion, this is what Tsongkhapa is telling us, the two then mature into realization or enlightenment. I know from my own experience that we can very easily fall into a rather limited or constrained view of renunciation. That it's just one part of the spiritual life, that it's just a matter of giving a few things up, or some things giving us up. We can be quite literal about what we may need to give up: harsh speech and angry outbursts, extreme sexual compulsion or obsession, meat and dairy, smoking and alcohol. And then maybe people will think that I'm quite a good Buddhist. But if we don't get hold of our false views, if we don't get hold of the false views underneath, which maintain our attachment to samsara, we're not going to loosen the bonds which are the cause of our own suffering. In past times, the call was, bring out your dead, bring out your dead. Don't wait until the plague of samsara really lays waste to you and it's too late to do anything about it. Just because spiritual ignorance is transformed by practicing the 10th precept or breaking the high fetters doesn't mean that you must concentrate on the rest first. Get to it. Bring out your false views. Bring out your false views. Renunciation is traditionally considered to be an attitude that abandons attachment to samsara, the cycle of existence, and the seductions of worldly life. Although the familiar translation of the Tibetan word ingjong is renunciation, a more accurate one has been proposed by Rob Preece, a long-time Tibetan practitioner and teacher, as definite emergence. And Lama Thubten Yeshe has described it as a determination to wake up. The psychological implications of this go beyond renunciation. They imply willingness to wake up and emerge from the unconscious habits and patterns within which we usually take refuge. We use many activities of our worldly life: television, work, food, relationships, as an escape into unconsciousness. Even spiritual practices such as meditation can be used to avoid feelings, responsibilities, relationships, and even living fully in our bodies. We can drift into a kind of detached, disconnected, but peaceful state that avoids reality and the deeper aspects of ourselves. So definite emergence is the willingness to abandon the habitual disposition of avoiding facing ourselves. It challenges the habit of letting ourselves sink into unconscious, anesthetized states of denial. I think most of us know that the intention of Mahayana Buddhist practice is not avoiding or escaping from our human condition, but the transformation of our relationship to it. Meditation is not a soft, quiet, easy way to generate a peaceful dissociation from the trials of life or help us get through the day without stress or frustration. Dharma practice will inevitably confront us with our emotional problems, acquaint us quite intensely with our shadow. And the willingness implicit in practicing renunciation means that we will also need compassion towards ourselves as we pass through periods of struggle and discomfort. Through a genuine love, self-acceptance, and sense of humor about ourselves, we can potentially uncover what is darkest and most unpleasant about ourselves. Compassion towards others begins when we are able to bear the process of renunciation, and in doing so, to empathize with the suffering of others. I'm going to say a few words about encountering my own shadow as far as food and sex are concerned, and how the process of renunciation has proceeded with respect to both of them. I've got quite a long history of practicing renunciation in terms of food. It started over 20 years ago. I gave up many things when I discovered that I had contracted HIV, because at that time there was no pharmaceutical treatment for the virus. It would be nearly 10 years before antiretrovirals were discovered and came into widespread use. So I jumped quite deeply into so-called alternative or complementary health approaches. I gave up coffee, tea, well, all caffeine actually, sugar, dairy, meat, and all tinned, preserved, refined food. I ate a whole food vegan macrobiotic diet. I trained as a macrobiotic chef, and then I taught cooking and cooked for people with AIDS in hospital. And this diet had a profound effect upon me. I had years of good health, loads of energy. I was a very fit cyclist. I didn't spend a day in bed for more than 20 years. Unsurprisingly, I became rather evangelical about veganism and macrobiotics and was probably quite arrogant and insufferable at times. 5 years ago, my health started to tumble. I've been taking antiretrovirals for 10 years, and I began to suffer the consequences of that, especially from the early versions of the drugs, which were very much more toxic. First, I had a heart attack. Then I discovered I had cirrhosis of the liver caused by drug damage. And the toxic effects didn't stop there. They've also provoked a very rare condition called sclerosing peritonitis. The peritoneum, the lining of the abdomen, is permanently inflamed and is laying down fibrosis all over itself and around my intestines. And as the fibrosis ages and hardens and contracts, it's strangling my intestines as the scar tissue shrinks. So my gut keeps getting blocked, and I'm not able to eat very much. No more whole food, no more brown rice, no more fruit and vegetables. So I get fed through here. I have a line in here, which goes into my jugular vein. And every night I have a bag of white liquid, which has carbohydrates and protein and minerals and vitamins, and about 1,800 calories. And it takes about 12 hours to pump that into my veins. So it demands absolute self-control in terms of what I do eat. I need to eat a small amount so that my gut doesn't stop working completely and I can absorb the drugs I do need to take orally. So I've had another whole lesson in renunciation. Now, for example, my diet consists of such things as a cheese sandwich on white bread, chicken broth, and boiled sucking sweets to resolve hypoglycemic attacks, things I never thought would pass my lips again. It's so tempting when out to ask a friend, "Aren't you hungry? Wouldn't you like a bag of hot chips or some pizza?" And I'm seeking to collude with them so that I can have a couple of bites. But the consequences can mean that my guts are then blocked for a couple of days, vomiting, excruciating pain. And I'm beginning to learn the lesson, is this really worth it? Is 5 or 10 minutes of temporary pleasure worth the consequences? I have to learn to set aside what attracts me. When I was in hospital for over 3 months with regular blockages lasting up to a week, nil by mouth, I would run the cold tap in my basin, which fortunately was plumbed into some very icy reservoir. And I used to lean over and just rinse my mouth with a little splashing, imagining that I was drinking out of a mountain stream. I've been amazed at how pleasurable the simplest things are, if I really pay attention. So, secondly, sex. I didn't have the typical experience of many young gay men, or even of many young people. I met Achyuta Priya, George, as he then was, in my early 20s, and we were together for nearly 20 years. This was a period of domestic bliss, albeit tinged with occasional jealousies and the spectre of HIV and AIDS. The suffering we then encountered brought us both to the Dharma, and in each transforming ourselves, our relationship started to unravel. When confronted with severe difficulties, I remember Padmabhadra saying to Achyuta Priya that we should both give up sex and live together like the Aniruddhas. But we were not yet ready to heed what we thought at the time was a rather wacky suggestion. Later, our relationship did unravel completely, and I embarked in my middle age on quite a promiscuous lifestyle, while at the same time practicing safe sex. Some years later, I met Achyuta Raja, Wayne as he then was, and what was refreshing for me was that this meeting brought us very promptly together in the shared project of wishing to spread the Dharma in South Africa. It was the first time in my life when there was a confluence between my sexual romantic partnership and what I wanted to do in the world, how I wanted to engage in the world altruistically. At the same time, we had a fairly intense sex life. 4 years ago, same-sex marriage was legalized in South Africa, and Achyuta Raja and I had a big joyous wedding with over 100 people joining us to celebrate, family, friends, and most of the Sangha. However, as we heard yesterday from Manjavajra, all relationships are destined to end through separation of one kind or another, and in my case, our sexual relationship was cut short by my illness. Now he's my very faithful and helpful companion. He's my very faithful and helpful companion and friend, and we do live together very much like the Aniruddhas. My difficulties with Achyuta Priya didn't last long at all, and that relationship has also matured into an intimate and supportive friendship. So it's actually a band of the three of us, myself and my two Achyuta brothers. I didn't think I'd be able to give up sex in this lifetime, and I was looking forward to a satisfying sex life into my old age. And then I became quite surprised about how a general practice of renunciation in my spiritual life seemingly quite seamlessly enabled me to face the reality of my situation. And I decided to make the most of living out the consequences of my illness and to formalize what had grown to become a commitment to abstain from sex and became an anagarika a few months ago. So, brothers, it's difficult to talk about such things without getting upset. That's two examples of stuff which has really hit me to the bone. Now I'm preparing for the big one, letting my body go. Because my health problems are very unusual and complex, I don't think I've got long. But I've still got spiritual work to do in this lifetime, and I'm very mindful of using the limited time left effectively. However acute my pain and suffering, there's nothing special about my impending death. It comes to all of us. All I can do is exhort each of you, don't waste time. Give up your unskillfulness. Explore and eradicate your ignorance. Let go of your attachments. Let them be gone. This is the heart's release.